Fans, please welcome our two Rambler raid captain of today's episode, Section 104's Bobby P. Bobby P will help us welcome the two Ramblers to the podcast today. Take it away, Bobby P. No, it's not time for the Cougar Cuties. It's time for the entertaining Two Ramblers podcast, where middle-aged guys talk Ramblers hoops from a very different perspective. I'm the host with the jokes, Dobber, from the class of 1994 and from the class of 1998. He's the analyst with the attention to detail, and my brother, Sammy D.
Oh, what a great introduction. Thank you. Thank you, Dabber. So glad to be here. Bobby P. from Section 103.
Section 104, yeah.
104.
He, gold alumni ticket holder. Hooked a brother up this weekend.
Yeah, he did. The Rambler, Dobber, the Rambling Man.
And as we have found out on my Vagabond tour, I found this out from Bobby P. Bobby P. Graduated probably 2015, 2016.
Yes.
He is a Delta Sig, and he and some of his fraternity brothers from that era, 2016, 2015, 2018, all have seats in Section 104. And yeah. And so I actually didn't get Bobby P's seats. I was supposed to get a guy named Max's seats. Max sent me the wrong tickets for a different game. And then two guys named Diego and Jordan sent their tickets to me. So thank you, Diego.
Hey.
And thank you, Diego, Jordan, Max, and Bobby P.
There you go. Love it.
Delta Sigs, baby.
Delta Sigs. Living it up.
So, yeah, you know, they're in their late 20s, and I'm in my mid-50s. Just partying it up, baby.
Oh, my gosh. I feel old.
So, yeah.
But yes, we had two games. We thought about this week that we were going to come. I would love to be two after coming back together after two wins. Not the case.
Yeah, so we had we were in flames. UIC 72, Loyola 67, and cold shooting in the second half there. And then on Saturday we had a little Dame time with a win over New Orleans 73-70. So kind of a split decision this week in old Rambler basketball. And we're going to get right into it. So, Sammy D, what are the three things you saw this week with the Loyola Ramblers?
Well, you know, I'm just going to go right off. Number one, it was just unimpressive. Like, at different points, like, I had to watch the game on rewind. And a couple of different times, I just was like, I fell asleep because it was just boring. So, that was one. Number two... Who do you think you are?
Guess who's back? Back again. Dark Lord's back. Tell a friend. It's Lou, everybody. Hi, Sammy D.
Lou, once again, or it's not once again. So wonderful to see you, because I'm taught to say that if you don't have something nice to say, you don't say anything at all. But so nice to see you again.
Well, you knew I was going to have to be here this week.
Yes, it was without a doubt. I knew.
Boy, was it a little on the nose to have you go down to the flames. You know, I'm kind of a flame guy, if I say so myself.
And, yes, I can see where you're a big fan of them.
I really love tormenting you guys in that game, too. I kind of think of, like, the, you know, in the book of Job, just having Marquise at the end make all those free throws, a Rambler making free throws at the end to make you guys lose.
That was a little bit of, just knife, just keep digging it in.
It was so good. So good. It hurts so good. I love watching you guys suffer. It's so awesome. Yes. So the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Sadly, yes. But I think there was a little bit of redemption, if you will, in that second game where the Ramblers hit a bunch of their free throws. They hit 17-24, which is pretty awesome. But Lou, what were your general thoughts of just like of the Flames game? Were you able to watch a good portion of it, or did you just catch the
Well, in hell, we only get ESPN Plus. So I watched it. I think a couple of the first minutes were cut off, though. So.
Yeah, I didn't understand what happened there.
So, it was a little up and down, but it ended well.
Yeah, for you it did, but not for the Ramblers.
Oh, well, Sam, I'll put you out of your misery today. I don't want to drag this bit out, but just let you know that I'm back and I'm watching, and you'll definitely hear from me when you get into the A-10, I'm sure.
Hope not, but I'm sure you're not a man of your word.
Da-da-da, da-da-da-da, I'm loving it.
You got any deliveries scheduled for this year?
Yeah, Duquesne. I think we need to do another DoorDash bit.
Lou the Dark Lord, everybody. Thanks for coming in.
Wow, that was exciting already. What is it, episode two?
Episode two. Is it episode two? Episode three. Episode three.
Is it episode three? Oh, yeah, I guess so. Episode three. Yeah. We did a preseason.
Preseason, talking about the preseason games, and then, the first two games.
All right, so you were getting into your points before we were interrupted, and what was point number one? It was boring this week?
Uninteresting. Now, the games were exciting because of what was going on, the score, but, a number of times, especially as the Ramblers were on offense, just throwing the ball around the perimeter, there was no action. Even Chris Sparks, I remembered their names this week, Chris Sparks, Jordan Bloomfield, on the call for ESPN Plus. And he just said, this is not Loyola basketball. Literally, they're doing a defensive drill where they're just throwing the ball around and the defense is able to, figure it out. And there was no movement, no slashing at times. And it was just and I literally fell asleep on a couple different occasions. It took me three watches to get the UIC game done because I was I just can't watch this. This is so painful or so uninteresting, and was really kind of disappointed. And then I find just really fascinating about that UIC game is we should not even have been in that game. Much as we talk about the annoyance of, teams hit a lot of free throws against us. Look at the disparity. We shot 23 of 25. Great. 92%. Oh my gosh, I'm jumping for joy. But the fact we still lost by five, and we made nine more free throws than they did. So that means we really lost by 14. And just wow, that game should not have been as close as it was.
Well, I mean, the stat that jumps out at you is the second half shooting.
Yeah.
0 for 11 from 3-point. I mean, even if we shot 20%, we'd be in the game. I mean, when you don't make two,
right?
Two would have been a tie, or we would have been ahead.
One by one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're up by one if we make two. Right. And then overall, we were 8 for 28. We were 28%. This 30% shooting. Really, this is one of the worst shooting halves I've seen since our Ohio State meltdown, which was epic in the tournament a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, this was some of the worst shooting I've ever seen in the last few years.
Yeah, and that's why it just, and then even rolling that into the the Uno game, where like I would look up and, oh, they're up by 11. Okay, all right, this game's going to be over, and all of a sudden the game would be tied. I'm like, what the hell happened?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I mean, we're facing what's his name? Was it Jordan Johnson?
Yes.
Jordan Johnson. I don't know if you caught this stat. I actually was going back to watch some of the plays to pick a JB Giants play of the game, and I just happened to hear that they said Jordan Johnson last year was number one in the entire country for 3-point percentage, and he had 100 shots that he put up. So it wasn't like he just was one of these guys who put up 20 shots and got lucky.
Yeah, just enough to qualify.
Yeah, no. So we were facing a great three-pointer, and it did. Boy, I was in the game. There was like a sinking pit in my stomach every time that kid touched the ball in the second half. Because it felt almost inevitable.
He shot 50%. And he wasn't taking any cheapies either. I mean, he was way out there. You know, 6 of 12 from 3, 11 of 22 overall. It's like, yeah, wow.
He had a hand in his face, too, and he's not a big guy either. No. So at different points, you know, Dez was on him, and it's like Dez had inches on the guy. I mean, so he just was on fire, and he actually took the last shot, and he missed. And it was like, thank God, you know, give him two more shots, and he would have probably beat us. Or give him one more shot and he would have beat us, I bet. I guess they were down by three, so they would have tied. So you were bored by the offense.
Yeah, and I can't say any more about that.
I don't know if I can really speak to the UIC game because I kind of didn't know what was going on with that. But because I was at the UNO game, I paid really close attention, and there were a couple of times, and I didn't go back and look at all the stats and all the, you know, play-by-play or the play-by-play kind of breakdown, but there were at least two times that I remember where our offense kind of stuttered and then they scored a quick 4 points. Like,
right,
we should have been scoring, like we were going up for a layup and missed, and then all of a sudden there were a couple times where there was like a 4-point swing, and I was like, oh my gosh, we should be up by four right now. And instead, we're tied, or we're just, you know, one. I feel like we should be 10 points up, but we're 6 points up. I mean, this happened a couple times. So,
yeah. And that's what it just was infuriating the whole game. Like, it just, we should be up more, and where it's either we're only up by three or we're tied. And it's like, this game should not be close, but yet it kept coming that. And to Loyola's credit, I think it should be commended is the fact that, you know, they did have these two games back to back where they did initiate the offense to the point that they did go to the free throw line. They were not as successful in the UNO game as they were with UIC, but they were still made afloat because they went to the line, which was encouraging because in years past that wasn't the case. But the other thing that really jumped out to me was it reared its ugly head, but it was turnovers. In the UNO game, you know, they had 15 to New Orleans 7. Like,
there were several turnovers that are, I feel like, unconscionable. We get the stop. We get the defensive rebound. You just need to come down and kind of clear out with your elbows a little bit. Just wait a pause. And there were several times where we had made the great play and then turn the ball over, passing it on the break. you know, and I think some of it might be a little bit of a rookie kind of challenge with Miles. I think did it at least once or twice. But it just seemed like with the UNO in particular, they were looking for us to be a little lackadaisical right after the turnover or right after we got the defensive rebound. And yes. So this is where I think the book on Loyola is out. You know, in the past, I think when we were the Cinderella team and stuff, I think, you know, other teams wouldn't be that familiar with us. But the way that UNO came out and pressed us at the very beginning of the game when we were just trying to inbound the ball, and then the way that they would try to swipe at the ball after a defensive rebound. You know, a lot of times when you see a good team rebound the ball defensively, the other team runs back because they're so scared that you know, they're going to get in their offense. So they don't even look at the guy who caught the ball. Whereas UNO was dragging a little bit to see if they could get an arm on a pass coming.
Right.
And so it happened a couple times. And every time it happened, and this is where I'm talking about the four-point swing. We should be going down to score because we got the stop, and now they're scoring again. It happened in one of the games where they swipe at the ball. This is in UNO. They swipe at the ball, they get it, and it's a layup. So yeah. Instead of getting down and potentially getting a stop, going up by, you know, scoring two more, we've now given two to them.
Yes, love that. Yeah, and then the third thing that jumped out at me was, I think this will probably be the theme throughout the year, but with Phil going down and Jaden already suffering an injury, that we're already getting out of our rules and what is needed. And with Phil especially, that was evident at UIC. New Orleans, I think we were able to kind of overcome that a little bit, but I think at times his presence would have been greatly, Loyola would have benefited from him being out there, definitely. But coming up against teams that are more quality, especially in the next two games, yeah, not having him on the floor is just, it's just going to ask a lot of guys that really, it's unfair. I mean, it's not unfair. It's the game. But, you know, but just the reality of, like, when guys are out of their roles and trying to do too much, that's when things, you know, they become lackadaisical, or not lackadaisical, but try to do too much. And then when you try to do too much, you end up making mistakes that are like giving the ball away instead of making ball security and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that in the New Orleans game, I think Dame came in, played kind of the Phil role, and did a great job. Got a double-double. I just think, though, that A-10 talent and A-10 height and A-10 bodies are going to not – that's not going to work.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know. But I do think, like, we're this New Orleans team, from my vantage point, it reminded me of one of the teams we played last year, where they had a couple guys who could shoot, but then they had a couple guys who looked like they came from like a YMCA game. They didn't have like D1 bodies. There was one guy, I think it, number 23, what was his name? 23.
James Gisson the third.
Was that who it was? Yeah, yeah.
Played 16 minutes.
James Glisson, yeah.
Glisson, I'm sorry, I can't read.
Yeah, James Glisson, yeah. He just looked a little...
Is he the big guy?
Yeah, no, there were two big guys. There was a guy, number five. Number five, Tyson Jackson, and then this other guy, he was kind of a big point guard type. But they just didn't look like... Some of the guys that we, you know, they didn't look like Dayton, you know, last year.
Yeah.
Or VCU. They just looked like a team that was from a smaller conference. So I don't know if we're going to be able to do the old, you know, well, Dame will just play the fill role. I mean,
right.
I don't know if that would work in with better competition.
The other thing that I noticed in both games, and it was way more evident in the UNO game, but there was a lot of front rim misses. And I don't know if Coach Drew on, you know, later in the week, the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday practice, ran them into the ground. And so then they didn't have the legs then for Saturday. That's what it kind of looked like. You know, like they didn't have the legs. So then, I mean, they were missing short. And I've always heard that when guys miss short, it's because their legs are tired. They're not, you know, they can't get the shot correct up or get up correctly. And that's what I noticed that a number, like, and it wasn't just one guy, it was multiple players. And most of them from three. And it was just like, what is going on? Why are they so short? So that was just a glaring thing. It was like, but I didn't listen to the post game conference to hear anything or.
Well, there was definitely a drop off in the second half. We were kind of cruising along at one point, and this is what kind of was hard to watch is I felt like at one point we should be up by like 20 points. Like was like, we had a couple of these like weird turnovers where it was like, we made the play. We got the stop. How did we turn the ball over? We had a couple of those, and then, you know, they had a couple of great shots at a couple points, but I kind of felt like, no, my brain kept going, wait, we shouldn't have turned the ball over there. We should be up by 14 now, or we should be up by 16. Like, I kept thinking that in my head, and then I'd look and it'd be six. We'd be up by six.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, at the end of the game, you're like, well, they can't get all the way back in this. And then it's like within, there was one point, weren't they up at one point in the second half? Did UNO get up at one point by 1 point or something?
Let me double check. I thought that sounds familiar, but I'm not seeing it. Oh, 72. No, they never were actually up.
Okay.
But they did tie it, or it was 68-66. That was the closest, and I think that. Oh, and then the other one was 72-70. They definitely made it close, where it was definitely like, why this game should not be this close.
Well, and then every time that kid got the ball, Jordan Johnson or whatever, you're like, oh, great. We're going to go down now, because if he scores a three, we're down.
Yeah, that was it. It was 2 points. They were only up by 2 points.
Okay.
But yeah, should not have been that way.
Well, let me give you a couple positives I saw. Wait, are you done with your three?
Yeah, that was my three and an extra bonus.
I'll give you a positive that I saw. An interesting. I'm always interested in the combinations of guys when they're playing, who's playing with who.
Yes,
we've seen this now. This, you know, multi guard setup where you got Dez, you got Dolan, and then you either have Norris or Jay Quinn. So like three guards all on the floor at the same time.
Yeah,
but the thing that I found the most interesting was there were multiple minutes where Miles and Welch were playing together. And yes, I was calling it in my head, you know, when I was broadcasting in my own thoughts, I was calling it the Twin Tower lineup. And it actually, I don't know if this will work against, you know, some different competition. But there was a great combination of Welch playing great defense, really a little bit being kind of like a tall Braden Norris, almost organizing a little bit, bringing a little firepower, but also bringing a little organization. And then I feel like that took some of the pressure off of Miles, who had multiple blocks in the game.
Yeah, and five blocks.
Looked more relaxed when Tom was playing. Now, this might have just been the way I was looking at it, but it felt like Miles was a little more at ease when Welch was on the floor.
Yeah.
And I tried to see if the statistics back this up, but the other impression that I had was that Miles, when he's on the floor, even if he's not scoring, causes the other offense to struggle more because of his height and his shot blocking. It's almost like even when he's not doing something, he's still influencing the game. Whereas other guys, I don't necessarily see that impact. And I was looking to see in the plus minus to see if that lined up. He does have a pretty good plus minus, or not pretty good. I mean, it's positive for when he's on the floor. Believe it or not, guess who's leading the plus minus for the Ramblers, you know, of guys who have played multiple minutes. There's a few guys who have good plus minuses who haven't played much this year, but guess who's number one by a long shot?
By a long shot?
By a long shot, yeah.
We'll go with Dez.
It's not Dez. It's Dame, actually.
Oh.
So last I checked for the season, he's plus +9. So,
huh.
So he's one of the better ones. We've watched that stat before. I didn't see any other real patterns. Dame was just high. And then Miles is like maybe 1.2 or 2. And I think he's one of the higher ones. Dez is in positive. And then, you know, I don't know, one of the bench players is like, you know, really high. Like, I guess when Caleb came in one of the games or something, we must have scored a whole bunch of points. So one of those other bench players has got a high number. But anyway, so let's give away a couple of awards then.
Let's do it.
So I'm going to give the... I want to give the Hammer Hawes Award for Heart and Hustle out. And I'm going to go in a direction that last year wouldn't have happened very often because this guy started a lot. But man, Tom Welch coming in the game for New Orleans, I thought was clutch. I thought there were just things he was doing in that game, organizing the offense, taking pressure off of Miles. He ends up scoring, I think, like 8 off the bench. Is that right?
Yes. 8 rebounds, 8 points. Or, I'm sorry, 9 points.
Yeah, 9 points. And 2 for 3 from the line. But he just had a lot of energy, a lot of excitement. He was getting really pumped up. And so it was pretty amazing to see him come in. And I think he's going to be one of the pieces that is going to be important for us. I think Drew has a lot of trust in him. He was on the floor the last probably 5-10 minutes of that New Orleans game. He was not coming out. Miles came out and stayed out at some point, but Tom was in for the whole end of that run and closing out that game. So definitely my Hammer Hawes player of the game.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think I would second that. I thought it was interesting the lineup choice, you know, to have Dame start and then Miles and coming off the bench. I like that aspect of because he comes in energy. I thought that was really a unique, you know, switch up. A sneaky one that I was really excited to kind of see him play, but it didn't bear out in the points, is I like the fact that Jalen's getting a fair amount of minutes. He had 16 minutes in the UNO game. He had 25 in the DePaul, the UIC game. Although I was still having some mistakes, like he had 2 turnovers in the UIC game, but none in the UNO. But just like I think a consistent play out of him is really exciting because he does offer a unique athleticism off the bench in spelling Braden and, you know, or pairing him with Braden, just another ball handler. So that's one to watch, you know, for the weeks to come. But yeah, love the love the Tom Welch pick. I think he can be that guy that gets everybody hyped because of his attitude, is the way he embodies Loyola. He stayed. That, you know, it's like, I think he is one of those guys that he could be, you know, hammer haws, you know, throughout the year.
Well, and this could have easily gone to Dame. I mean, Dame had a ton of energy. Dame was cheering for himself and for the team. He was pretty amped up in the game. So he definitely impressed me. This is the first time I've actually seen him play multiple minutes live. And so he was doing a lot, especially on offense. So his footwork was really good in that game. And he was cheering and yelling at different points. Yeah. And that, you know, me, I love that kind of gregarious player. So I was definitely excited by him. He could have easily gotten it. Miles at different points really looked good in that game, that UNO game too. And so I'm sure they'll both get it at some point this year, unless they just become starters and,
right.
And then we have to keep looking for other, you know, looking for gems off the bench, but,
right.
Well, that was it. I wanted to share a JB's Giant play of the game, though.
Go for it.
And it's a play that you might not have seen or noticed so much watching on the TV broadcast. But early in the game, in the first half, UNO is pressing us as we're trying to get the ball up the court. And I think this is from the tape on us last year that we kind of were struggling with pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Ball pressure, especially bringing the ball up. And, you know, I definitely think that's out on us, this idea that, hey, this is a way you can get this team off balance a little bit. And so Greg Dolan throws the ball in. He maybe throws it in twice, and they swat it back out. And Coach Drew saw something that he liked, and all of a sudden, Dolan is not throwing the ball in. And Dez is going to throw the ball in. And I'm thinking, Dez is throwing the ball in. This is interesting. What's going on here? And the next thing you know, Dez throws like a baseball pass, or is it a football pass? What do you call it when you throw like a whole court pass?
I'm going to go football.
Okay. It was like a football pass to Patrick Mwamba, who sprinted. He sprinted kind of like on a go route to the hoop.
Right.
And Dez threw the ball down to him. Now, Patrick catches it under the hoop and just as a step off of just, you know, doing a layup or dunking.
Doing a monster dunk, yeah.
And then the other guy catches up with him, and he ends up, he got credited for a block, but he's kind of misdirects the shot or gets right. a hand on it or something. And then Mwamba gets the ball back and passes it to Dez, who's now sprinted the length of the court. And Dez is driving what looks like he's going to drive in for a layup, but he ends up dumping the ball off, no look, to none other than Miles Rubin, who just, you know, gracefully goes up and dunks the ball.
Right.
And it was a, you know, complete beautiful ending to a play that got a little off. But here is the thing I thought was exciting about it was they stopped doing that press thing. The, you know, once we broke that press on that play, they stopped goofing right. around with that. But yeah, that was kind of cool to see us respond differently than last year. Cause I felt like last year that was happening to us all the time.
Yeah. It was definitely out, and it was definitely like, it was infuriating to see them continue to do the same thing and get the same results and expect we should do something different. Like, well then do something different. But yeah. I agreed. That was it's one of those that you don't see, but yet you love to see. You don't see it in the stat sheet, but yet you definitely see it in the game and at the stadium.
Well, and they did do some other stuff, bringing the ball in. Dolan would bring it in. Dolan and Norris were bringing it up. They started coming in the backcourt and go, let's just get the ball safely across the line. So the other thing I thought that the book's out on us is this, you know, maybe being a little lackadaisical after a defensive rebound. The fact that you know, UIC did this to us and UNO was doing this to us. I think they're telling their guards, I think they're telling their guys who have kind of a nose for the ball, hey, just pause a second as you're coming up into transition and see if you can catch one of these ramblers just, you know, kind of throwing an errant pass in the backcourt.
Yeah.
So I think those two things, I feel like the book's on us, that we struggle with this. It will be nice if we could have another one of these games where we shoot 90% from the free throw line, because I think that's another thing that's kind of out on us is like, well, you know, if it's tight at the end of the game, don't be afraid to foul the Ramblers because they're only going to make like half of their shots.
Yeah, I don't want to go all the way back to the first, but it's like I feel like the free throws, if they can hit anywhere from 75 to 90 would be phenomenal, but 75, it's like I don't think that would be the issue. What I like about the fact that they are going to the free throw line, and that was evident with Dez, with Dame, with Patrick Mwamba, you know, they're initiating the contact of driving to the hoop, which is exciting to see, and then drawing the foul rather than just chucking up shots and then, of course, not getting the free throw and then being annoyed. Like, why didn't we shoot free throws? Well, you have to initiate the contact in order to get free throws.
Yeah. Interestingly, in the second half of that game, we did make some good free throws throughout that game. But there was it felt like there was a lot of calls going UNO's way. There was this weird point where they had eight team fouls. The Ramblers had eight team fouls and they only had four. And I felt like we were getting fouled on every possession. But again, this reminds me a little bit of the Jordan rules, or you know how Jordan would get contact and get an and one eventually, you know, after he'd been in the league long enough. But if Pete Myers came in, Pete Myers might get clocked going to the hoop and they're not going to give him, they're not going to give him a foul. And he's like, and he gets up going, I got fouled. And it's like, hey, you're Pete Myers. Okay. Right. Where, and I feel like the Ramblers are a little bit like that too. Like we haven't quite dominated to the point where, you know, I think Phil's probably the best at this. Phil gets so crazy going up to the hoop that it's as long as he gets the ball up above the rim, he's going to get a foul called because they're hanging on him.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't get the ball high enough, if he kind of struggles, it's maybe a 50-50 if he gets the foul called. Just because he got body contact, that's not going to be enough for him. He really needs to make it demonstrative that he's about to score a basket and they have hands on him.
Yeah.
Whereas like some of our other guys, I mean, this happened with Lucas. This has happened with Braden. You know, they run around the corner and try to cut the corner and they don't get the benefit of, you know, they're not Jordan. They don't get that Jordan rule. And I think that's going to be a continued challenge for us. I think someone like Dez, who's pushing the ball, Dame too, I think they might get more calls than some of these other guys, but it does seem to be following us a little bit, is like we were struggling to get calls against University of New Orleans. And if we're struggling to get calls against them, we're going to really struggle with A-10 talent, I think.
I think just something, I was going back over just the stats. In the final 10 minutes of the second half, to close out the game, they had four field goals, but seven free throws. And it's just like, so it is really fortunate that they won that game because they only made four field goals. And really, within the last 5 minutes of the game, they had one field goal. And am I looking at that right? Yeah, at 5:38, they had a good three-pointer by Greg Dolan, and that was the last field goal made by the Ramblers. So it's like, that game should not, I mean, it was good that they had a lead, but they were able to maintain it with some free throws down the stretch by Norris and Dame. But, we definitely have to, I don't know what it's going to take. I'm looking forward to this week of out in Kansas City. I think, again, another test, litmus test. But if they keep shooting like this, it's going to be 30-point losses. I don't care how many free throws you can make.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I didn't mention this after the Barstool Sports game. I did hear some Drew whispers on the way out. Is Drew the right guy? Like, I was worried about this last year, and is this more of the same? And I'm like, and I'm thinking, well, we just faced a Final Four team, and we have a lot of new pieces. So I was kind of like, I don't know. And then we lose to UIC. And I'm just like, ugh, it's like losing to the Packers, you know? It's like, and we've beat them 10 times in a row. So it's kind of like,
right.
And the way we lost to them, I know it was close at the end, or like, I mean, it's on the score sheet, it's 5, but boy, it sure felt like out of reach for the whole game for me. Like, I felt like we were just struggling to be in sync in that game. And then we get New Orleans, and even though they won, the whole game I felt like we should be ahead by more, we should be controlling more. I saw Will Smythe was wearing Kobe Grinches, you know, the green Kobe Grinches.
Yes.
And I was thinking, well, I'm going to see Will today, hopefully, get a couple shots with his Kobes. And I was thinking about, I was already thinking about the post that I was going to put on Twitter with Will Smythe and his Grinches. And then it's like, Will Smythe isn't going to get close to the court today based on the way we're playing. I'm glad we won. I'm glad we just, got a win. But I know they know that it was ugly, and that's not what we're trying to be. Like, we're definitely have a higher level of success that we have in mind than that.
There definitely were some things that were said after UIC, which was, although a tough loss, but was encouraging. Coach had referenced it that, and I can't remember, I saw it on Twitter, but I remember back to that Final Four season. Yeah, they had, before the Florida win, they had a horrible loss at Boise State. They lost by like 30, I think. And then even after the Florida win, they had another loss at Marquette, I think it was, or no, Milwaukee. It was in Milwaukee. And so there definitely were some, I think there could be some head scratcher losses, moving forward. But the thing I was encouraged by was the fact that Drew sees promise with this squad. Whereas last year, as they were struggling, he's like, I don't know how we're, almost kind of like, I don't even know how we're going to win a game. Kind of, motif was like, whoa. You're the one that should not be dark and doldrum. I'll leave that for Lou. But he's encouraged by the play, and like, it's going to come. It's going to come. And so I'm like, all right. When I hear the Drew whispers, or, he's on the hot seat kind of Twitter stuff, I'm just like, who else are we getting? Like, we're not that. Let's allow this guy to learn and to grow as a coach, and and really kind of set the stage of, like, this is a new league, new team, new, I can't think of the word. And so it's just like, let him grow. I'm okay with that. Who said we need to be in the Final Four every year? It's like, again, my one goal always is, whenever we hit the floor, we deserve to be on the floor with the other team. Now, sometimes our play doesn't deserve that, but when we walk on the court, it's like, yeah, we have a chance to win every game. It's like, I'll sign up for that every day. I don't care who's coaching. And if it's a young guy who's going to, grow the team into something more, great. But I just don't want some name to have a name. It's like, we haven't earned that, right?
Is Frank Martin going to be available soon?
If he chokes out any more kids, holy smokes.
Is he, I mean, I can't, did you see what I posted on Twitter where he's screaming at this kid? A picture of a still of him screaming at the guy.
Yes, I did see that,
and
yes.
And then I posted a still frame from last year when he was yelling at RJ, what was that kid's name? I don't remember that. He went to St. John's. Right. But it was almost identical. It looked like it was the same. It looked the same. And then the weird, it's in the background is some weird guy who's like a...
some intern grad assistant.
Some grad assistant or something is behind. It's the same guy from last year. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this is like a repeat of last year. So... I did actually, believe it or not, talk about A10 Twitter. I jumped into one of those broadcasts. You know how on Twitter, how they do the spaces? The Dobber jumped in. I actually jumped in as two Ramblers. And here's the funny part. I was just listening. And then all of a sudden, it was like the host is asking you to talk. Because they had a question about, were you listening to this?
No. I know how it goes. So I'm just agreeing with it. Yes, I understand. The host asks you a question.
But anyway, it was really interesting to hear A10 Twitter. First of all, A10 Twitter, I think VCU fans were saying, hey, you know, we're kidding with you Rambler fans. You know, like we're actually happy you're in the league. but we like to joke with people. And I'm like, hey, like, I'm like, I get it. Like, it was just kind of funny. They were being apologetic. For their whatever. And at one point they said, we're a public school. We're like in case we didn't know, like Virginia Commonwealth is a public school and we're I think the way they think of themselves is we're like a scrappy public school, playing against these private schools. That's kind of the way he was explaining it. But they were pretty gracious. And, but the interesting thing is there's a lot of eyes on the program, on our program, partly because I think they want us to be good because of our national profile. They realize that more people know our team than just about any other team in the league, short of Dayton, probably. And so there's this idea, like, if we can be at the top of the league, playing quality games, playing quality opponents in these invitationals, it'll be good for the A10.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, because if Loyola gets back on the trajectory that they were before they moved to the A10, where there's a potential of an at-large bid every year, then that's only positive for the A10. Because once again, people forget this, is that when teams of a conference go to the tournament, the league gets the money. It's not the team. The team gets a portion of it and a chunk of it, but the league gets money. So the league wants teams to go to the tournament. The league does not want to have a one bid A10. They want a three bid league. And if Loyola can do that, and I think they can because of where they're situated, I think they have the notoriety, the name recognition. It's like, and if they can right the ship where it's like, if they're at the top of the league every year where they're in the discussion, much like last year when the season started, you had Dayton and St. Louis who were in the top 25, and then they crapped on their leg during the season. But it's like, if you can maintain that where it's like, hey, one or two of those teams or both of them get in plus the at-large guy. Yeah.
Well, and they were even talking in this Twitter spaces that, you know, they all kind of root for A10 victories in non-cons.
Right.
Because it, you know, it rises all the ships. Like, it makes our conference more valuable, makes our in-conference wins more valuable. If we're not having any quality wins as a conference, then when we beat each other up, it doesn't mean as much. Doesn't mean as much. So the one guy said, yeah, I always go for A10 in these tournaments, but when you know, when Dayton loses, I still laugh. I'm still like, part of me likes it. I know I shouldn't like it because it's bad for the league, but I still like it. So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I don't. And you know, an update on my last pick about Dayton may not be good. You know, they rattle off two wins versus LCU or LSU and St. John's this week, so good on them. And yeah, the A-10 across the board has done really well in the non-con. So hopefully that continues with Loyola this week down in Kansas City.
Well, and we were talking. I was talking with a Rambler fan who will go unnamed, just in case I embarrass him. But he. He was saying, hey, because we're in the A-10 now, I've been watching a lot of A-10 games. And he just said, I think we're going to struggle this year again. Because I think he just saw a number of these A-10 games in these other tournaments where they're shooting lights out or they're really dominating possession. And maybe some of the things that we struggled with last year, some of these other teams are still doing well doing. So...
yeah,
I hope they pull it together. I hope there's good learnings here. You know, it would be great to see us take a step forward. What did I say at the beginning of this year? I'd love to see us, you know, 6 or 7. Did I say this? Maybe
I think so.
Get a couple wins in the tournament. Like, yes. Let's take a step forward. You know, we don't need to win the conference. Even when I saw that we were picked 4 at different polls, I was like, come on, let's just hold off on the 4 stuff until we kind of prove it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I was listening to an A10 podcast, the 3-bid one, and them talking about, yeah, they really do see Loyola in that 5, 6, 7 range. And it's like, I think that's a good range for us. I think that's a good step because, hey, we definitely start at the bottom. And now let's move up and let's do that.
It was funny being in that Twitter spaces because they all had no idea who UIC was, but they were trying to they're trying to parse out the game. They're like, well, it was a 5-point loss, but it's a team that's in Chicago also, and I think they're like a bitter rival. They were like trying to figure out who they were because no one knows who the UIC Flames are outside of this 60-mile radius. So
exactly.
So anyway, it was pretty funny them trying to figure out who UIC was. So hopefully we'll play Chicago State in a couple weeks and win by like 50, and then they'll be like, oh, they beat another Chicago team.
So I have to admit, it definitely was salt on the wound this week of seeing, you know, the interview with Keese, and then seeing the
didn't even watch it.
The video. I didn't see I didn't see the interview. I just saw him being interviewed, asking about it. I'm like, I can't watch this. Or the videos.
I just scrolled. I go, I don't want to see
the videos of the, you know, the coach coming in and getting the water. I was like, oh my gosh. And it was like, and then Chicago's college team or something like that. I was like, oh, come on. Let's slow down.
I don't know. I saw some people in the stands with Marquise stuff on. I'm like, you know me. Dead to me. You're dead to me when you leave.
Yeah.
You're dead to me when you leave.
You graduated. Hey, you're an alumni. When you start giving an Abba, you fan.
Yeah. Especially, you're especially dead to me when you're playing me and you beat us. You're really right. Dead to me.
Yes.
Like, I don't care if you and Braden still text one another about stuff and they're buddies and stuff. I don't care. Like, that doesn't... I want wins for Ramblers. So right. Anything short of a win for a Rambler is not worth my time. So anyway, I don't... Again, I don't want him to get injured. Although I did see St. Thomas, but believe it or not, after we talked about him last week, he got a double-double.
He did.
So
he had a good game.
I don't know how he played against. They played a big team,
Colorado State.
They played Colorado State. I don't know how they did against them, but anyway, so he did get a double double in his second game. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So this week, Creighton is on Wednesday at 3:00 on CBS Sports Network, and then the next day on Thursday, Thanksgiving.
Wait, CBS Sports Network? I've heard of that. Am I going to just be able to turn on my TV and watch it?
Yes, you will.
Wow.
And then Thursday, Thanksgiving, they're playing either Boston College or Colorado State. So again, I will be ecstatic if they come away with one win. I literally may run through the Chesapeake streak and if they won two, but because I just, that Creighton team, they look really good. And so, yeah, I'm really hoping for one win. Two would be through the moon.
All right. Well, it sounds like it's time to get us out of here.
It is.
And right as I wanted to do that, I can't find my sound sample here. There we go. Oh, no, that's not it. All right, here we go. Well, Rambler fans, two Rambler fans, have a great Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Hopefully you'll be thankful for one or two wins this week. That would be great. Have a safe Thanksgiving from the two Ramblers. I'm the host with the Jokes, Dauber, and for the analyst with attention to details, Sammy D. So long and go Ramblers.
Go Ramblers!
Boy, I ended that a lot earlier than it should have. I'm out of practice.
What do they call
it? Hit the post.
Hitting the post in the radio biz.